You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. I'm here today with my co-host, Mr. Luke LaCoy. Hey, you have the book today. Today we're talking about writing. I named this episode Reading, Writing, and Baby Kicks. So the reason I named it that, can you guess why, Luke?
I had a real big burrito for lunch.
That's a pretty good guess. That's
feeling the kicks.
That's a pretty good guess. If it was from Del Taco, then definitely you're feeling the kicks. If it was from Taco Bell, I mean, you're probably not. You're probably like, eh, whatever. But today we are talking about reading a book called Stephen King's On Writing, and then Luke may be on hiatus for a little while because he may be with child.
Yeah, we're the due date is the 11th, but you know he can come any day.
Any day.
I think I came like 3 weeks early.
Wow.
So that's what my mom was telling me. So you know, we're
there. You go. Fingers crossed. So Luke. Being on the podcast may be a little less for a little while they're getting used to having a kid. It's your first one, so It's the most difficult one because you have no idea what you're doing. Just realize they're not breakable. They're going to be okay. They're pretty resilient. Just don't drop them on the head. That's it. You're good to go.
No dropping and no shaking.
No dropping and no shaking. That's right. It's not. Don't dance. You can dance with them like a little bit, but don't be like, woo! They're not maracas. So today we're going to talk about Stephen King's On Writing, which is, I think I've said this before, this is one of my favorite books. I actually own two copies, the physical and the digital version. I never own two copies of any book, but just any time I feel stuck with writing something, I'll go and read it. And I think that the reason is because there's so many just good quotes in this book. Like one of my favorite quotes is, "The road to hell is paved with adverbs."
Yeah.
And I think that's just such a good, like, just shows you who Stephen King is. Like, he really cares about words, what they mean, how to use them and stuff. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Another one that I loved, writing is a lonely job. Having someone who believes in you makes a lot of difference. And what's great about this is such a true thing. So many like comedy writers, screenwriters, whatever, say it's lonely. I sit in my office. I sit at my desk. I sit in the library, I sit at a coffee shop, whatever. And I write, and no one else knows what I'm going through in that moment of writing. And if no one knows and no one's there for you, it feels like it's in vain. Luckily, you and I write for money usually, also for pleasure, but sometimes it's hard to tell somebody how hard writing is because they're like, dude, you just sit down and type like stuff. Why are you complaining about it? I dig ditches every day. You know, you're like, oh, okay, my bad. You know, but still it's a lot. It takes a lot from you, right?
Yeah, and what's interesting too is like Stephen talks about different kinds of writing, and it's funny because like he kind of bashes comedy in a way, but he also bashes like technical writing,
yeah,
and like brochure writing and like the kind of like the not completely brainless, but there's a formula, a strict formula that you use for those. And I mean what you and I, we do creative writing and we do I don't think the comedy writing he's referring to. But you know, it's like we're essentially writing fiction for screenplays,
right?
And it's a process. It's not just there's not a formula, and we're coming up with these characters, and that's kind of, well, and it's just funny how he explains it. It's like, you know, you're interacting with these fictional characters almost in a way,
yeah,
and that can be draining.
Yeah, and when you're writing your screenplay, hopefully you're seeing that film in your head, and you're seeing those characters interact, and you're, you know. I've had characters where I'm writing a script. I already have the outline, everything. I think I know what's going to happen because I've outlined it. But sometimes characters come up with a better line or something better, or they go a different way, and you're like, whoa, that's not what I was thinking was going to happen. But it feels right. It feels real, and it feels like they're telling you the story they want to tell you. I'm working on somebody's project right now, and I'm writing one of the characters, and he just kind of – every situation he is the underdog, and I'm always rooting for him, but he can't seem to get out of his own way. And even though I've written it so in the outline, worked on it so that he will eventually win. Like, he'll get his win. I'm having a hard time getting there, man, because he's constantly in his way. And he does it to himself. And there's no, like, I literally feel like if I wrote it any differently, it wouldn't be real. It wouldn't feel right. It wouldn't feel legit. So, yeah. And I know Stephen King even talked about how sometimes characters will tell you what they want to say or what they want to do or whatever. You think you know what they want, or you think you know what the right thing is, but they're the ones telling you. And it's there. In the truth, yes, we're writers, but we're writing their story, right? So you have to think about it that way. And this is a good, this is the line right there that makes me think of that is writing is seduction. What that means is, right, that it was just, it's one of those things that pulls you in and won't let you go. If you read a good book, if you read a good script, if you read a good story, even a good news article will pull you in and you'll be, wow, this is so interesting. It's seductive. It's calling to you. So there you go. Your turn.
Yeah, one point too that he made, and this is kind of going on what we talked about. He has interesting thoughts on plot. He doesn't like to plot everything out, you know, like in by a beat sheet. And the example he used, which I thought was super interesting, was dinosaur bones. He was like, imagine that a Tyrannosaurus Rex dinosaur bones are the plot of a story, and you're digging to unearth them. And so if you can't have it before you start writing, which is digging, and naturally through digging to find the plot, you'll naturally find it, which is also like, that's a real interesting way to think about it. And I think too, he made a point where it's like, if you're trying to force a plot point and your characters like that are going to do something that they wouldn't normally do and you force it, then he calls that like not honest writing.
Yeah.
And he's real big on, you know, honest, like, I don't know how he words it exactly, but being honest as a writer through your characters and their story. He's really big on that, which is, I think, you know, pretty interesting to keep in mind.
Right. And that's the thing. That's what I was saying is, like, literally my character can't get out of his own. I'm trying to help him, right? I'm trying to help him get out of his own way. I can't do it. It feels so wrong to do anything else. So he has these awkward interactions, these awkward moments that I'm cringing at while I'm writing, by the way, right? I'm cringing while I'm writing this, but it's the right way to do it. It's the right character. That's who he is. I can't change him because that's who he is. So it's really interesting. One of the best quotes about that Stephen King does, and this is what I always say to other comedians too, not just writers, but other comedians, is to write. Sit down and write. Find a time every day. Jerry Seinfeld's right, has that don't break the chain thing. But he says, amateurs sit and wait for inspiration. The rest of us just get up and go to work. And honestly, that's the truth. I sit down every single day. I have my list of what I need to do that day, and I go through it. I just work through it. Does it seem tedious sometimes? Yes. Does it seem boring sometimes? Yes. Do I get frustrated? Yes. Do I sometimes be like, I don't want to do this? Yeah, I do. But the truth is, I'm not waiting for inspiration. If I sat here and waited for inspiration every day, I'd never get anything done. I wouldn't. I just wouldn't do it. You know? Let's see. I love this one too, because I think this one is not really, the way he says it, I don't think is meant the same way. I'll read it. Write with the door closed, rewrite with the door open. What I think that means is, when you're writing the initial draft, you need to be the only person putting the input in there. When you are rewriting the draft, you need to get input from other people. That's what I think that means. At least to me, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Is that what you got?
I agree. Yep.
Yeah. It's such a good one. We've all heard the kill your darlings line, right? Kill your darlings, kill your darlings. Even when it breaks your egocentric little scribbler's heart, kill your darlings. That is a revision thing. That's telling you this, and this works for jokes too, right? You write this great joke. You think it's amazing, but it's too long. It's too wordy. You're not getting the punchline fast enough. You love it. You love that joke. You're like, this is the joke, but you don't know how to cut it. You're going to have to start killing pieces of it. You're going to start cutting words that you don't need. The thes, the we's, the thems, the ands, whatever. Start cutting stuff until you get, it's called trimming the fat, until you get that nice little meaty portion that you can pop that joke out quick and get that laugh. I see comedians write these long jokes and it's all this setup for two word punchline. And I'm like, what are you doing? It should be like two or three words for the setup and two words for the punchline. You're done. That's it. You know, if you need more than that, you're done. If you need more than two sentences to get to your punchline, you need to trim some fat. Something bad is happening there. And people are like, oh, that's stupid. I need, you know, I like to story tell. Yeah, great, great. Tell a story. But if you're not telling, if you're not getting a laugh every two lines or every two things, I'm sorry, your story is just annoying. People are going to be like, come on, dude, get to the point. It's like when you have a friend that just tells you random stories, but there's never a point. Just tell you the story. Yeah, we were in Jamaica, and then we were drinking this thing. And, you know, sometimes it tastes like coconut, but this other time it tastes like strawberry. And then you're like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to murder you if you don't get to the point of the story, right? So, go ahead.
Yeah, and let me look at my notes.
Yeah.
I like the book is not only – advice on writing, it's kind of his memoir,
yeah,
about writing, or his kind of a mini memoir of his life,
yeah,
focused around writing. And it was cool how he got rejected a lot, like a lot.
He had that nail that he would put all his rejection letters on. Oh my gosh.
Yep. And you know, but that didn't stop him, and I don't know if it was the first thing he sold, but one of the first pieces he sold was like a little, kind of like a Mad Magazine type of periodical that they sold. And it was either in middle school or high school.
Yeah.
And that started circulating, and his like people bought it, you know? And so he never gave up. And then he kept submitting writing and more rejection letters, like finally until he had a big break with Carrie, which, yeah. I haven't read, like, I haven't read like anything, or I've seen like maybe two Stephen King movies, but I haven't read any of his books.
Wow.
So, if there's any suggestions, I don't like the horror stuff.
I don't like the horror stuff either, but Salem's Lot is actually a fantastic film and a fantastic book. I prefer the book over the movie. There was a new one that had Rob, what is the guy's name? He's on Parks and Rec. Rob. I don't know his name. Anyways, he's a funny guy on there. He's in it. It's really good. But I read the book twice in high school, once for English class and once on my own. Salem's Lot is a fantastic book. It's not as scary as some of the other stuff. There are vampires in it or whatever, but it's a very interesting book. So it's not that scary.
Yeah, and like the fantasy supernatural is fine. It's just like when people are getting hacked to pieces.
And Salem's Lot doesn't really have a lot. It just has vampires and stuff. Mm-hmm. What I love is this other one too is, if you want to be a writer, you must do two things above all others: read a lot and write a lot. There's no way around these two things that I'm aware of. No shortcut. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes with comedy, right? You need to get up a lot. You need to write a lot. You need to get up a lot. You need to write a lot. You need to watch comedy, perform comedy. Those two things. If you want to be a screenwriter, read screenplays, watch movies, write screenplays. That's right. Well, yeah, you have to do it. I've written so many things. My problem is, and I know this, is I submit none of my stuff anywhere. I have written stuff, never sent it anywhere. I haven't sent it to competitions. I haven't sent it to managers. I haven't sent it to any, like, you know, any of those like stage 32 development things where you send it to a reader, like it's a producer or production company. They read it and give you notes or give you a, you know, 30-minute consultation or whatever. I haven't done any of that stuff. None of it. And I probably should, but I don't. And that is on me. That's my downfall. I'm too focused on other projects that I don't do that. I am going to finish this project. I just watched Vacation Friends. Have you seen that on Hulu? Hmm. It's John Cena and Little Rel Howery. He used to be on Carmichael, and he was also in what's the movie where the spoon and the white girl like abducts black people and then they put like them in their body or Get Out. Thank you.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I just told everybody the plot of Get Out. Sorry, guys. So he's in Get Out as like the best friend or whatever and stuff. And so this, he's in it. He's really funny. So it's Lil Rel and his girlfriend and John Cena and his girlfriend. They meet in Mexico on vacation. They party for a week and become kind of friends or whatever. And then Lil Rel thinks like, oh, it's over. We're going back home. Life is normal, whatever. He's going to get married to his girlfriend, who's now his fiance or whatever, and just chaos ensues. And it's such a good buddy movie that I loved it. I thought it was like amazing. But this is my problem. This is the problem with you watching and reading a ton of screenplays. You will start to guess what is going to happen in a movie. You say, if I wrote this movie, what would I write? So I'm not going to give you any spoilers, but there was a scene where one character takes drugs. And I'm like, oh, because they got their back, the other character is going to take drugs now. And sure enough, that's what happened. I said, and now that character is going to be calm under the pressure of drugs and save everyone else or save this character by keeping their cool. Exactly what happened. And then I was like going on and on. My wife's like, how would you possibly know this? I'm like, because if I was writing this, this is exactly what I would write, because it just makes logical sense. You would have to have these things work out in order for you to get to the final, you know, scene of the movie, which obviously is them cementing their relationship because it's a buddy comedy, right? That's what happens. You know, they hate each other. It's like Bad Boys. They're like, fight. Oh, I need you. Yeah, I need you to come back to help me with this thing. Nah, man, you already did this and you made me mad or whatever. And then at the end, they help each other out. They come together and they beat the bad guy, right? That's every buddy movie there is. It's just how it happens. What else? Go ahead.
I liked how also he wrote a lot about his writing desk and how he got like his dream, like a giant big, I don't know, a big wooden desk.
Yeah.
And he set it up in the middle of a writing room and he ended up never using it. And he prefers like a little desk in the corner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like away from everything else, because I think he made like some sort of metaphor, like you do your writing like when you can, anywhere you can, and it's better to like be in the corner of a room because life happens all around you and you're like,
here it is right here. It starts with this: put your desk in the corner and every time you sit down there to write, remind yourself why it isn't in the middle of the room. Life isn't a support system for art, it's the other way around.
There you go.
Right. So art is imitating life. When you write a book, you're imitating what's going on in the world. That's why people need to get out in the world if they're going to be writers or comedians or whatever. If you sit in a little corner all the time and life passes you by, you're not going to have anything to talk about, you know? So, and even when he says, you know, writing is a lonely job, having someone who believes in you makes a lot of difference. They don't have to make speeches. Just believing is usually enough. So if you have your girlfriend, your wife, your boyfriend, your mom, your dad, whoever believes in you, you're going to be more successful most of the time because of that. Now, there are things that have happened, like Quentin Tarantino just came up recently where his mom told him, you know, oh, that little screenwriting thing that you do, kind of like berated him for it, right? And he's like, you know what, I'm not going to give her a dime when I get famous and rich. So that was his fuel. Some people work off of negativity. Most people don't. Most people work off of positivity. Yes, you still want to show people that you can do it, but that's not usually most people's motivation. Usually there's someone positive there. Like my wife is always like, look, you're doing more than most people do. You're doing this. You're doing like, she'll list out all the things that I have going on. When I get down on myself, I'm like, dude, I'm not doing anything with my life. Like I'm just stuck. She's like, no, what are you talking about? You're doing this and this and this and this. You have these things made. Look at your IMDb. Go look at this thing. Look at your podcast. Look at your blog. Look at this. I'm like, oh yeah. Like sometimes I get down on myself and that happens, you know? So.
Yeah, and I liked too how he made a point of like when you're writing, have a reader in mind, and preferably one who's not gonna like just say it's garbage and you know why are you doing this, but a general reader who like would like reading your stuff and always be writing to them almost, or to write in a way that you know you're writing the story for them, and that kind of keeps your story or screenplay in perspective of you know your general audience.
Right.
And I think that's a super important point too that gets lost sometimes.
Yeah, and I like to think about who is the target audience for this film, right? Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of studios do that too. Like they call it the four quadrant system. Like, how are you going to get this group and this group and this group or whatever? Now, most movies aren't going to hit all four quadrants, so it's not going to happen. But if you think like, hey, I know that this is a male-centered film about two guy friends that go on a road trip and XYZ happens, right? So you know it's men. And it's this age group. So you have two of the four quadrants, right? Now, can I make it family friendly where they don't do X, Y, and Z? Maybe. Maybe I could hit three quadrants. Maybe I change one of the buddies to a female. And now it's a boy and girl. And it's also a rom-com buddy comedy family film. Now maybe you can hit all four quadrants. But will it work as well? Maybe, maybe not. You know, have you seen Jungle Cruise yet?
I'm cheap. I have to wait till.
No, it's fine. I feel like Jungle Cruise is a perfect example of a four quadrant movie. It's a family movie. It's a rom-com kind of movie. It's an action movie for dudes. and it has The Rock, right? Who is mm-hmm. that target audience is like 18 to 35 year old dudes, and also women apparently like The Rock. I mean, it's The Rock
for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. So that hits all four quadrants, and that's what Disney does. Disney always tries to hit four quadrants if they can. Now, sometimes it's skewed a little more towards female, like, you know, Frozen or Frozen 2 or whatever, but sometimes, and most princess of their princess movies, but a lot of times because they're family films, men also go to the movies because their family's going, right? So they kind of went out there a lot. So it's good for them. This was the thing that stuck with me because we talked about rejection. We talked about how they said, by the time I was 14, the nail on my wall would no longer support the weight of the rejection slips impaled upon it. I replaced the nail with a spike and went on writing. So he was even more determined. He like knew, I'm going to get more rejection letters. So let's set this up so I can take more rejection. No one does that. That seems insane. If I had a huge thing of rejection letters, after a while I might give up, to be honest with you, but the truth is you're not gonna give up, you know, because you're trying to do something. So many people waste their entire life going, oh, I wish I could have, I wish I should have, you know, I would have, or whatever, all these other things, and they just do a job or do something that they hate for their whole life. And if all of this COVID stuff and all of the things happening around us haven't taught us anything, the one thing it should teach us is There is nothing guaranteed in the world. You make your own future. You make your own road. If you don't do it, if you don't go out there and do it yourself, no one's going to do it for you. You're going to be stuck in a job that you hate. I forgot what it's called, like the Great Resignation, I think is what it's called, where people are leaving their jobs in droves because the COVID and all the lockdowns and all this stuff showed us there's nothing guaranteed. You could lose your job in a heartbeat. You could lose your house in a heartbeat. You could lose your life in a heartbeat. All that stuff showed people, I don't want to sit at this desk and do this crappy job for the next 20 years of my life. I'm going to do the thing I want to do, whether that's blogging, writing, dancing, creating stuff on TikTok, doing arts, doing whatever. Whatever it is that you want to do, that's what you should do. Now, I'm not saying go quit your job. That's not what I'm saying at all. But take that hour that you're going to watch TV or whatever you're going to do, and do the thing that you want to do, right? Go write a script, even if it's one page a day, right? That's 365 days. You can do it. If you only write one joke a day, that's 365 jokes. If you write, you know, book or whatever, paint arts, maybe only spend an hour doing it and it takes you 10 hours to paint a painting. Well, now you can do, you know, 360 paintings or whatever. I don't know. I don't even know how that works out. But whatever it is, you can do it. You can do it, right? You can do it. There's nothing stopping you. You're the only person stopping yourself. Everyone in the world could tell you you're not going to be successful. Everyone in the world could tell you that you have a one in a bajillion chance of being this thing. Well, guess what? They don't know. They don't know anything. They don't. Sorry.
The other point, too, that Stephen makes on writing is that how you take it, but he doesn't write for the money.
Yeah.
Which, you know, no one's going to write thing after thing after getting rejected, you know. I mean, he likes writing genuinely.
Yeah.
And he makes that point, like, if you're just doing something for the money, you know, maybe don't do that. And so if you start a new, you know, creative passion project or a new career, you know, try something that you actually like. It might be a slow burn, you know, it might take a long time to get momentum. Or you might end up on TikTok blown up overnight. I mean, you know, things like that happen all the time. Yeah. So you never know.
That's true. I mean, that's the thing is, like, this podcast wasn't started for money. We didn't start this to make money. We started it so we could gain knowledge, so we could learn, so we could share that knowledge with other people. And so we could talk to people that we looked up to, that we wanted to mentor us, that we wanted to learn from. That's the whole point of this. Do we get a little bit of money now? Yeah. It covers our fees every month. That's it. We don't make a bunch of money off of this. We didn't start it for money, but now it covers at least the hosting cost every single month. That's awesome. To me, that's a win. That is a win. Most podcasts aren't covering their hosting cost every month. We are. It's great, right? Would I love to make a living off of this? Sure. Do I think it's going to happen? No, not at all. Not even 1%. But that's okay. It's still, we still get to do it every week. We still get to share the knowledge. We still get to talk to people we want to talk to. Now we have people reach out to us asking to be on the podcast. That didn't used to happen. That's happened over the last couple like year or so. We've gotten that a lot. People come here to promote their stuff because we have a great audience, a great fan base, people that care about us, people that we care about. This is really, we didn't start this even for us. We started to, for you guys to share. And I feel like Stephen King with On Writing the same thing. He's like, I didn't write it for myself. I wrote it to share with you guys so that you would see what I've been through, see and understand what I've done and why I've done it and why you should do it too. Why you should go. And this isn't just for writing. Yes, it's called On Writing. I get it 100%. It's not. It really should be called On Living, because it's really a manifesto on how you should live your life, where do the things that you're passionate about. Don't let rejection or failure or mistakes or anything deter you from doing what you want to do. Because if we all let one setback or one failure or one mistake set us back from accomplishing our goals and dreams, we'd still be just sitting on the side of the road doing nothing, because life is failure. Life is setbacks. Life is mistakes. And if you don't take those things and learn from them and push forward, you're never going to be successful. I mean, how many times, you know, did Elon Musk fail? How many times did, you know, Jeff Bezos fail? How many times did, you know, Bill Gates fail? How many times did, like, so many people have failed in their lives, and guess what? Now they're successful. You know, actors can tell stories of like, hey, I got rejected from this role and I got kicked out of this thing and I didn't graduate from this acting school and my professor said I sucked and I should give up, you know, whatever. Like, there's all kinds of stories like that. And now they're like famous actors and actresses. Okay, great. You know, there's comedians who are like, I forgot. I want to say it was like Chris Rock or maybe it was Kevin Hart. One of them said like some comedy club guy was like, nah, you're never going to make it. Like, you should just quit now. Like, just quit, give up. It's not made for you. You're not good at it, whatever. I want to say it was Kevin Hart. I want to say. Because he had like a little thing, we called himself like Little Kev or whatever, and he did some weird, and people like kind of crapped on him and like, hey, you should really give up. And then he started going on the road with other comedians and like, look, man, you don't suck. You just need to fix A, B, and C, and then you're going to get better. And he did that, and he got amazing, and now he's one of the biggest comedians in the world, right? So all it takes is he could have – what if he would have stopped? What if Kevin Hart would have said, you know what, you're right. I'm just going to go flip burgers, or I'm just going to go – sell shoes or whatever, right? We would lose that. We would have lost all the Kevin Hart stuff in the world. How sucky would the world be then? That would suck. So
no Jumanji 4 or 5 or however many.
I think it's 4 now. I think it'll be 4 when this new one comes out, right? Because it was the original Jumanji, then the first Jumanji with him and The Rock, then the second one that just came out. So yeah, it'll be number 4. And you know what? Who thought that we would get more Jumanjis? To be fair, I like the Jumanji movies. I mean, they're not like, yay, the greatest thing ever made. But hey, you know,
I would make a point that the Robin Williams one was
that was a great film. Yeah,
I'll watch that any day.
But that's Robin Williams. I would watch any Robin Williams movie anytime, right? Even though, dang it, why did I just go blank? What's the movie where he's the doctor? Patch Adams.
Yeah.
Even though it's a super sad film, I love that movie. Although, you know, what's an underrated Robin Williams film, the one where he is an adult kid. He's like a kid, but he's a grown adult. Jack,
yeah.
It's a good movie. Such a good movie. Oh my gosh. So that's the thing is, like, think about if like someone told Robin Williams, like, probably was in school, like, hey, you need to calm down. You're, you know, hyperactive and annoying and whatever. Like, shut up and sit down and fall in line type thing. I'm sure someone said that to him. I'm sure a teacher, because that's just the way it was. And now, you know, he one of the greatest comedians and comedic actors of all time. Like, no one's ever going to deny that. I couldn't even think of a bad Robin Williams movie.
No, but I'm sure too. He probably took heat when he wanted to do more drama roles. You know,
yeah.
Like, no, you're the funny monkey. Like, why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
And look at the great roles he was in.
I mean, yeah, he was amazing. So, I think the last one that really, really gets to me, there's two here. This is such a great line. Let's get one thing clear right now, shall we? There's no idea dump, no story central, no island of the buried bestsellers. Good story ideas seem to come quite literally from nowhere, sailing at you right out of the empty sky. two previously unrelated ideas come together and make something new under the sun. Your job isn't to find these ideas, but to recognize them when they show up. And this, to me, says that you should not try to sit down and force an idea. You have the idea, then you put it to paper and you try to figure out let the story guide you. And I do plot stuff, right? That's true. Mm-hmm. I do plot things. But even when I plot things, I know the beginning, I know the end, I know kind of what should happen in the middle, but I let characters kind of go their own way. Does that mean I have to edit it later on? Of course. But I let characters tell me their story, their path, what happens to them, who they are, what they see, what they experience, what they feel, and those things get put on there. And then I can always come back and edit it later. And then the last one was, optimism is a perfectly legitimate response to failure. That's the get up and try again type thing, right? You're going to get knocked down. You're going to get rejected. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to drop the ball. Guess what? Get back up and go at it again, right? If you gave up, like, if I would have given up after my first script I wrote, my first screenplay I wrote, which was a Encino Man meets Frankenstein. That was the idea behind it, right? Of, like, these family uncovers a Frankenstein that gets dropped in their lap. The son tries to make him a good friend. Chaos ensues. People are hunting for the Frankenstein kid, but they go to high school, and the kid who was previously a weirdo and a loser is now popular with this other kid who's the Frankenstein, and blah, 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 right? That kind of thing. It turned out terrible, right? The story seems awesome. Like, it seems like it could be a great story. I couldn't do it. I could not make it work. I've gone back to it 3 times or 4 times and I just can't do it. I think, honestly, it's one of those things that at this level that I'm at, I'm not ready for it. I can't do it. Some other things I've written perfectly. I wrote a Brooklyn Nine-Nine spec script. It's one of my favorite TV shows. I wrote one first time. I only went back and edited it for mistakes or whatever. It was amazing. People loved it, right? But I could not get the other thing to work. I don't know what it is, and that's okay. But imagine if I would have given up after the first one. Now I wouldn't have been writing. I wouldn't have written the web series that I wrote, some other shows and series, things that are coming on Amazon. Like, literally, I've done so many other things because I didn't give up, because I realized, hey, this is the first time I'm doing this. I'm not going to be great at it, right? Nobody's first draft is perfect, even Stephen King's, right? And he's one of the greatest, most prolific authors of all time. So there you go. All right. Anything else, Luke?
No. That I think we summed it up.
Yeah. This is a book that everyone should read. Whether you're a writer or a comedian or actor, whatever it is, it's, like I said, it should be called On Living. It's definitely a motivational book for what you need to do with your life. I honestly wish we could get Stephen King on. Like, that would be amazing, because I'd love to talk to him about it. I'd love to talk to him and, like, pick his brain. Like, I know he wrote it all here, but I feel like there's so much more inside of him that would be so helpful to other people if he just talked for 20 minutes, 30 minutes to us.
Yeah.
I honestly think it was like Barry Katz, right? Like, I know what Barry Katz was going to say, but even then, knowing what he was, be undeniable, right? That's his thing. Even when he said that, he still had so many little nuggets of helpful advice that I left there being like, oh my gosh, it was overload. It was great. And I have to digest this over and over and over again. So,
yeah, I would have liked to hear more about the transition from novel to screenplay, and, like, if he was involved in any of that, or, you know, what changed or what had to change. And because he didn't really talk about it at all. He was just talking about his novels in the book.
But yeah. Well, I mean, that's what he's known curious for. About that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, we should write, I think it's called, was it William Goldman's book? We should read that next year. I'm going to look it up real quick. I'm pretty sure William Goldman, he wrote The Princess Bride, but he wrote a book. What's his book called? But yeah, he wrote The Princess Bride, Adventures in the Screen Trade, Personal View of Hollywood Screen Run. It's a fantastic book. We should read that as one of the books. But yeah, he wrote The Princess Bride, and so thanks to him, we have that movie. That's awesome. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Where can people find you, Luke?
Luke LaCoy, all over the webs and the Fiverr.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we don't have you back, congratulations on the baby. We'll have you back at some point, obviously.
Yeah.
But being a dad takes precedent to being on the podcast. Luke and I will look for someone else to fill in for a little while for him. We have no idea who it is. If you want to throw your hat in the ring, you want to come, that's what we should do. If you want to be a guest host for one episode, email me. Email me, jamesdcravis@gmail.com. My name is in the thing. Email me or put a message on the YouTube video and let's connect. Let's make this happen. That'd be awesome. Actually, I want to do that. If you want to be a guest on this episode or on an episode as the podcast co-host, let's do it. That'd be awesome. We could talk about whatever you want to talk about. We can talk about comedy. We could, whatever you want to turn it into. Obviously, we'll keep it clean and stuff. But let's do that. I would love to have some people throw their hat in the ring to be co-host. So let's do that. Cool. You can find me at jamesdcrevison.com, comedypreneur.com. That's where all the stuff's going. I'm putting up more articles. I'm working on stuff right now. Or go to Fiverr, James D. Creviston there. You can hire me to do anything. I am getting hit up every single day. I'm working on a lot of projects. A lot of funny stuff. A lot of more commercials lately than anything, which is very interesting to me. But that's great because comedy and that go together. And also, I am hoping – this is my hope. I'm hoping to start an LLC soon so I can do some other things outside of that that will include in the physical world. Just, I don't know what you call it, the internet world for Fiverr. But in the physical world of doing events for people, coming and helping with some – comedic marketing and stuff like that, and getting my company that I've been dreaming of for years and sitting on my butt not doing anything about it, get it off the ground and get it going, because I'm seeing the desire and support for comedy. And then after talking to Glenn Tickle about his Jerk the magazine, I literally want to put out a comedic, like, digital comedic magazine every single month or every quarter. I think probably we'll call it quarterly, probably do it quarterly, just so, because I know it takes time, and just do that. So I'm getting motivated, and then also reading Stephen King saying it just makes you want to. I have so many things inside me that I need to get out, that are like in, like, ideas in my brain and in my heart that I need to get out, that I need that outlet. So thank you guys so much for listening. Go pursue your dreams. Go read On Writing. The link is in the show notes. It helps support the podcast, pay for stuff. So please do that. Please also, while you're listening, please listen to the commercials or the ads. I know that they can sometimes not be your thing, but it really helps support the podcast and helps us pay for all this stuff and come at you every month and then get guests and do everything we're going to do. Luke, we will miss you. Hopefully we'll have you back soon. So good to have you, and it was good to kind of go on the book first, and then we'll see where the rest of the things take us. So
yeah,
thank you everybody for listening. Thank you, Luke, and have a great week. Bye.